WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When Marita Golden was in college, she fell in love with a Nigerian architectural student. He was the son of a chief. They married and she moved with him to Nigeria. But once there, she found she couldn't conform to family expectations of the traditional Nigerian wife. She moved with her baby son back to America. She's since written a memoir and two novels. Her new novel, Long Distance Life, is set in Washington, D.C., where Golden grew up and now lives. Long Distance Life is the story of three generations of a black family. It begins in the South in the 20s and follows the family as they migrate north. The story is set against the social movements of the times. Golden says that Washington played an important role in the social history of African Americans.
Well, it's important because, one, it was carved out of the state of Maryland, which was the largest slaveholding state in the Union. And you had right there in the a couple of blocks from the Capitol, slave pens where African Americans were sold. It's important also because it was the first stop on the trains above the Mason-Dixon line that brought African Americans from the South during the Great Migration of the late 20s and 30s. It's important also because of institutions like Howard University, which formed the bedrock of the black middle class, certainly. And it's lastly important because it's been a venue for protests around issues of equality and racism affecting blacks for as far back as our history goes. And in fact, in the book, there's a scene where one of the characters is involved in a protest dealing with the Scottsboro Boys in 1933, and that actually did occur. And I just thought it would be kind of neat to have one of my characters involved in a protest that really is historically accurate.
Now, this is why you spent 8 months in the Library of Congress.
Yeah, that was around near the end when I had my story, I had my characters, and I knew what was going to happen to them. And then I had to rediscover the city of my birth. And to do that, I did do a lot of research at the Library of Congress, but I also talked to people in my own family who had come up from the South. I was lucky enough to find a woman who was doing research on black women migrants from the South who became domestic workers, which is essentially my mother's story, but my mother is dead. So she let me listen to these tapes, and the tapes were incredible as a source of really rich inspiration. And Washington's a wonderful city because there it draws like a magnet so many talented and adventurous people to it, so that when I wanted to find out about the civil rights movement, there were just all these women there who had been involved in the movement, and I could talk to them. So I really didn't have to leave. Everything was there for me.
Well, you've said that the character of Naomi, the matriarch in this family, is based on your mother. I'm going to ask you to read a short excerpt from the beginning. This is in Naomi's voice.
There's no secret to living so long like I have. Nothing you can bottle and sell. I just tried to do right by folks, and that took me a long way. There was an old woman down south where I come from. She was the woman everybody went to with their troubles. They called her Granny Eyes, because she could see so good what would happen to you if you did this or if you didn't do that. She worked roots and healed folks through faith. Today she'd be making a load of money, but back then folks just brought her whatever they had. And people always asked Granny Eyes, when she looked them in the face real hard, to explain what was ailing them, or when she'd start to decipher them cards she used, or fixing up some potion. Folks would start asking, what it look like, Granny Eyes? What it look like? And she'd just say, it looked like life to me.
Did your mother ever say that, by the way?
No, but my mother did believe in spiritualists and faith healers, and that was a direct result of her upbringing in the South. She did believe in that. And there were women in our neighborhood who I remember when I was would be going through horrible love affairs or something, and she would say, "Well, you know, you can just go down and see Miss Mamie on the corner, and she just tell her what's wrong." And I would say, "Oh, Mom, stop it! You know, I'm in college. I'm too rational for that."
Did you feel that you lost something by being that rational?
Not then, but I think probably now. Certainly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Naomi, the matriarch of the family.
I prefer to call her the center or the kind of spiritual consciousness.
And tell me why you don't like the word matriarch.
Because it's sort of, I think that it's inaccurate in that Black society is not matriarchal. And it's a term that has a lot of pejorative connotations, even though I suspect that your connotations are not pejorative. But
The connotations being there's no men around, so the woman has to run the family?
And it connotes, in a real matriarchal situation, as in African societies, there is a certain amount of power and influence that the women do have.
Mm-hmm.
But as it's applied to African-American women, it's just the reverse. But I saw her as kind of the griot of the family. That's why she's all of her sections are in the first person, because she's the emotional center, the spiritual lock, and she's the conscience of that family over this period of time that the book covers.
Mm-hmm. Naomi's daughter, Esther, leaves her son for 5 years and goes south, joins the civil rights movement. Are you saying that you think motivation sometimes for political activism are very complex?
Yes. You're the second person to ask me. Yeah, I think that a lot of times some of the most effective political leaders have been and often are people who are neurotic, people who are seeking to lose and find themselves, to make up for some absence, something that they lost, something they never had, through involvement in something very large, something bigger than themselves. So I think that that is often a motivation much more frequently than we acknowledge, more often than philosophical motivation, altruistic motivation. And I don't see that that is necessarily wrong. If you can't deal with the family, well, okay, maybe you can deal with 1,000 people and make their lives better. But yeah, I think that's a real strong motivation for people.
And part of Esther's motivation for leaving is that she feels very claustrophobic in her home life, and she needs to leave.
And she needs to find herself. And in all of my books, there's always some female character who does that, who goes off and finds a definition of self through a much larger social, societal, or political experience. I think it probably mirrors my own journey to Africa when I was in my early 20s. And that was the most, profound experience of my adult life.
Another theme in your new novel is people walking out on people and then returning again. And I was wondering if that's happened in your life, if anyone has ever walked out on you and showed up years later.
No. No, it hasn't. But I think I was more intrigued by the idea that you can return, that when you leave, you can return, that family is the place where they have to take you in. And that's what Esther does find, that as Naomi says to her, "You were my daughter all the years that you were away. You were still Logan's mother all those years that you were away." So that I do believe that it is possible. I believe in second chances. Profoundly. And I do believe that you can come home again.
Well, you came home again in a way, because you left the United States when mm-hmm. you were, I guess, in your early 20s. Mm-hmm. You married a Nigerian man mm-hmm. and went with him to live in Nigeria. And you write about this in your autobiography, Memoirs. Mm-hmm.
Migrations of the Heart.
Mm-hmm. But you found that the life really wasn't your life, that you weren't ready to fit yourself into the life of a traditional Nigerian woman,
mm-hmm.
and you came back to the United States. So you decided that you wanted to come home again.
Yeah, I guess it's, I guess that there is a level also, certainly that in my own life, I have come home again. I thought with unblinking certitude that my destiny was in Africa, but it wasn't, because there were stories that I was supposed to write that were not there, but that were in, of all places, my hometown of Washington, which seemed to me at that time the most unglamorous, unexciting place on earth. But my destiny was not where I thought it was. It was back right where I started. So I think, yeah, and I have found the experience of being back in Washington very satisfying. After leaving it, I left after I graduated from American University. And the city has matured politically and artistically in the years I was away. So it's a very different kind of city. And for a writer, it's a city that is more congenial and more has more to inspire you.